Good afternoon, everybody. I call the Senate Health and Social Services Committee to order at 1:31 p.m. on Thursday, March 10th, 2022. We're meeting today in room 205 of the Capitol Building. Please remember to silence your cell phones as a courtesy. Committee members present today are Senator Reinbolt, Senator Hughes, Senator Begich, myself, Senator Wilson. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Senator Costello is excused on other state business today. We have a quorum.
Yeah.
This afternoon, we have three items of business. First, we'll take closing comments and look through the will of the committee for HCR 10, American Heart Month. We'll continue public testimony on SB 175, Healthcare Services by Telehealth. And finally, we will continue public testimony on SB 192, Board of Licensed Midwives, and ask some questions of the sponsor. First, we have Rep. Gillum here at the table to provide any further comments and closing comments on SCR 10. I almost said Senator. Representative Gillum.
Thank you, Chair Wilson. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Ron Gillum, Representative Ron Gillum from District 30. I want to thank you all for hearing HCR 10, my resolution naming February as American Heart Month again, for hearing it again today. I know it's a little unusual to retroactively name a month. What's important is another opportunity to bring cardiovascular health to the forefront and to everybody's attention. I look forward to bringing this resolution up every year, a little earlier, the next year being January, and just kind of keep everybody's heart health on everybody's mind. As I've said before, if I can help save one person, you know, keep them from having a heart attack or a stroke, get them more pay attention to their heart, to their bodies, and get help. Just get people to pay attention to their health, so that they, don't end up having a heart attack or a stroke. So, other than that, thanks again for your support. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Gill. Do we have? Yes, Senator.
I just have a question because I know it came up in the other body, and I don't think it's true, and I'd just like to get it on the record that this bill is about starting new state programs regarding heart health. Can you speak to that? Is that what this bill is doing?
No, and through the chair, Senator Hughes, no, it's not about starting any new programs. This is just about awareness. It's just an informational, The American Heart Association and other organizations, they will teach you how to do CPR, but what I was thinking is CPR is a little bit after the fact, so what I'm trying to do is help before you get to having a heart attack. And so, no, it is not about starting any new programs. This is just information.
And then I'd like to make one other comment that's come up just to get on the record for my own self. I am very pro-life. And I care about babies in the womb, and there was some reference that somehow this was taking from that as saying this is a worse problem than that. And I just want to say my support of this has absolutely nothing to do with that issue, and I am 100% pro-life, and I also think it's important for people to be aware of their heart health. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
And for the record, through the chair, Senator Hughes, I agree that I am 100% pro-life, and this had nothing to do with overshadowing abortion. This is just, like I said, it's just for information to people who are a lot older than a baby, and they start having heart issues. So we're just trying to stop them from having a heart issue so they can enjoy their babies.
I do. First of all, I'm so thankful you're here. You know, I was so stressed out when I found out what happened. So not only thank you for surviving, because you are a survivor, but also bringing this to the attention. I think we all have very high stress jobs, and I think it would probably be good for all of us to pay more attention to this issue. So I really want to say thank you for that. I also want to say, as I was coming to this room today, I ran into a woman whose husband just died of a heart attack. And it was very sad, and they can't link it 100% to the COVID shot, but it was right after the COVID shot. And I think that there's anecdotal research that shows about 50% of the people post, if they get the D-dimer, which is a clotting, then that there's a significant number of them that do have clotting issues in their fingers and in their toes. And so I think nothing more than now, it couldn't be more important to bring attention to clotting issues, to heart attack issues, than now, knowing some of the research that's coming out. And I always wanted to have that adverse event for the, you know, post-COVID, so it could be separated and isolated versus, I believe it's still the number one cause of death in Alaska right now, heart attack and strokes. But I just also wanted to be able to analyze that for Alaska. And so I just want to say thank you so much for bringing this. It's an absolute delight to support this. And there couldn't be anybody better because we lost Max Grunberg as well. And that was really, really hard on me. He was a good friend. And it's a very, very real issue that many of us have to face. And we're just happy you're here to be the champion of this right now. So thank you.
Thank you. You know, one other thing through the chair is I did not get the shot. This was genetic. And like I said, it can happen to anybody. So I appreciate that. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other comments? Seeing none, do we have a will of the committee? Senator Hughes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Concurrent Resolution 10, version 32-LS1478/I from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Right. Any objection? Seeing none, House Concurrent Resolution number 10 passes committee. We'll take a brief at ease as we transition to the next item of business, and congratulations, Representative Gill.
Thank you.
We are back on the record. Our next item of business is Senate Bill 175. We are going to continue a public testimony. We're going to open public testimony. We do have a couple of people here in the room in Juneau to testify. We first have Ms. Polly Beth Odom. She wants to come on up, and thank you for making that wonderful long trip from our region of the state.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to testify to all of you. My name is Polly Beth Odom, and I live and work in the Matanuska Valley, and I provide case management services for adults that experience long-term mental illness and traumatic injury in both Anchorage and in the MATSU. I'm here in full support of Senate Bill 175 and the accompanying Senate Bill 265 for the continued use of telehealth services. Telehealth allows and provides an alternative for in-person services for individuals who may not have reliable transportation to attend appointments that are in their community. As you may remember, in January of 2022, we had a pretty devastating windstorm that occurred, and the wind actually shuttered my business operations in Palmer, and I had to quickly turn to telehealth to be able to provide continued services. Because I had set up services during COVID to use telehealth, we were able to continue to meet with our consumers face-to-face. We were able to check to see if they were okay, if there were any services they need, and also to be able to help them get connected to their behavioral health providers if they were in crisis. Telehealth is an essential tool to our toolkit of services that we provide in behavioral health, and I would ask that your continued support for that bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Could I just say a quick comment?
Yes, quick comment. Yes, go ahead, Senator Begich.
Thank you. I just, Mr. Chairman, I just want to take a moment to thank my classmate from high school for coming down here, and I just never get a chance to see her. So, Polly Beth, good to see you again. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for indulging me.
Thank you, Ms. Mary Beth. Next up, we have John Asada. You can place yourself on the record, John, and you know the drill, 2 minutes. Provide your testimony when you're ready.
Great, thank you. For the record, my name is John Zazada. I'm the policy director for the Alaska Primary Care Association. Alaska Community Health Centers requested that we come back and reiterate two key areas of support that they have for SB 175. The first is payment parity. The vast majority of health center operations and for a variety of other practices lies in its staff. Health centers operate using a team care model where different members of a care team, provider, nurse, care coordinator, lab, pharmacy, any of which could be involved in a single telehealth encounter. They also wanted to let you know that they have used chronic disease management telehealth calls as a gateway for strongly encouraging patients to come into the clinic to follow up on labs and other services that have far better quality results in person. The second is to support the range of modalities that include audio only and flexibility to introduce new modalities in the future. Patients who currently experience a lack of bandwidth and other challenges have grown accustomed to accessing care over the phone and appreciate that flexibility. Our experiences over the last 2 years have allowed many more Alaskans to understand and experience the benefits of telehealth. Most profoundly is the ability to receive care from home when necessary. They don't want to lose that and go backwards once the federal PHE ends, and strongly encourage the speedy passage of this bill. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. I'll go anywhere, Tom. Okay. Clarifying question, yes.
Yes. Well, I guess a clarifying question. But bottom line is, we just don't want Alaskan physicians to be undermined in any way. And with you being here, it does make a difference in the way that I'm processing this bill. So, one, do you think it will undermine because they don't have to have the inpatient visit by an Alaskan provider anymore? They can get more outsider. And so that, I guess that to me is a really important question.
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, I think for the federally qualified health center, community health center movement in Alaska, the vast, vast majority of our providers are all in-state. Primary care exists in the communities that it serves. So we're more focused on, that's really not an issue in our particular system of care, and hasn't been an area that we've been engaged with in this bill. We're again primarily focused on the payment parity, the modalities, and the ability of patients and providers to be able to work flexibly from not just within a clinic building.
What did you say the movement was called?
The community health center movement, federally qualified health centers in Alaska.
How many sites now?
29 and 220 sites, probably a few more than when Senator Hughes was with us a few years ago. And you as well. Thank you. I would never want to not recognize your service at the PCA. Thank you both.
Senator Reinbold.
Yeah, I would love a list of those. So thank you. Just wanted clarification, that's all. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you for indulging us with questions. Is anyone else here in the room in Juneau like to testify on 175? Seeing none, we'll go to the phone lines. We have Jessica Estes. If you can place yourself on the record, Jessica, and state your name and affiliation and provide your testimony with 2 minutes, it'd be wonderful.
Good afternoon. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. My name is Jessica Estes. I am a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner. My current role is as the chief nursing officer at Alaska Behavioral Health. However, I am here today expressing my personal views and those of the APRN Alliance. In speaking on telehealth bills, working in the mental health arena, there's an opportunity for us to maintain continuity of care. The changes in this Senate bill would allow us to keep those clients, regardless of their geographic location in Alaska, as well as those individuals who perhaps are limited by their ability to get into the clinic. It's important for those individuals in mental health services to be able to access that continuity and provider care, as well as those individuals that are perhaps at the end of their life, those hospice patients being able to maintain that provider relationship and get access to care. I think the last time we did public testimony, we have had some wonderful individuals that were there talking about what it means to keep that established patient-provider relationship and to be able to continue that regardless of what their personal circumstances might be. We certainly are available at any time to answer any questions, but we strongly support this bill moving forward with telehealth.
All right. Thank you, Jessica, for your testimony today. And seeing no one else online, we will go ahead and close public testimony. We'll take a brief at ease. We are back on the record. At this time, we're going to set 175 aside and bring that piece of legislation up, I believe, next week as we continue to work on amendments and working through different stakeholder groups to make sure we can get better consensus within that piece of legislation. And next up, we have Senate Bill 192. We can ask the bill sponsor if you would like to come up, Senator Kawasaki. If he wants to give a brief overview of this piece of legislation, and then we will continue on with public testimony for this piece of legislation. Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for the record, it's Scott Kawasaki, Senator for District A, representing the city of Fairbanks, Badger, and Fort Wainwright. I appreciate the chair for bringing this bill up again. I know that it was already read once across before, and everybody's gone through the sectional analysis. And so I just wanted to say that, you know, originally the purpose of the bill, and this is by request, sort of a late bill that we picked up here. The purpose of this bill basically would institute licensing requirements and regulations for certified professional midwives. There is a nationally recognized midwife organization for which, or one in which that this one would be used, and I know that there may be an amendment forthcoming on this. You know, the purpose really boils down to this. Senate Bill 192 is to ensure that there are safer at-home births and also improves prepartum and postpartum care for mothers and infants. And so I just brought this forward, again, on behalf, and would appreciate consideration or suggestions on how to make Senate Bill 192 a better bill. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Reinbold.
Thank you. I want to say in your absence, your staff did a marathon 43 section. It was amazing sectional. I've never seen anything like it. So anyway, she did a good job. I want to say to you, thank you for bringing this bill forth. I kind of wish it was piggybacked with the naturopath bill. So if you want a little suggestion, you know, that's something you might want to consider entertaining. That one was?
It would need a 60 to make it a larger.
Oh, I don't care. I don't care. I want that naturopath bill to go through. So anyway, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you. Senator Baggage.
Senator Kawasaki, part of this bill was also in response to a limited renewal of the midwife board. And I'm just Chris was here earlier. Chris Curtis, the auditor, but she's not here now. And I did have a question I probably wanted to pose to her. Is she coming back or?
We were just mostly just going to take public testimony for this hearing. And
oh, okay. So we can wait till then. You bet. Okay.
She may come back, but I told her that she was not needed for this because we were just going to take mostly public testimony and allow the.
If I may.
Yes.
So I did talk to her briefly out of the committee room before the committee convened, and my question to her was, how much of the bill is under the scope of the audit request and how much is in addition to that. And she expressed that there was that number was limited. So I look forward to when she comes back before the committee to be able to ask her which portions were related to the audit and which are in addition to the audit so that I have a full understanding of where we're coming from with this bill. I support the idea of ensuring safe practice for birth and support my colleagues' efforts at this. And I just want to be sure it's the right bill at the right time and that it gets through in an appropriate way. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
But in absence of Ms. Curtis, there's another person that may be able to answer some of those questions. And if she would like to come forth, Director Chambers.
Mr. Chairman, I'm reluctant to put this on. I put so much on Director Chambers. Oh, good. Chris is here. Chris is
perfect timing. Ms. Curtis, if you could also come to the table.
I thought I was going to warm the chair for her.
We'll take a brief at ease for why she transitions. We are back on the record, and we are joined at the table by our legislative auditor, Ms. Curtis, and our director of, what are you, business licensing and...
All the licensings.
Yes. Director of Business License Corporation and Professional Licensing.
She's got a license to fill.
Yes. Senator Begich, if you can repeat your question.
Sure. What my question was going to be to you, Chris, the question is, the audit from 2 years ago, which led to a truncated renewal for the midwife board, had some specific issues. And what I'm trying to get at is how much of the bill is directly related to those specific issues. So if you could just remind the committee of what the concerns were that came out of the audit and how this bill is beginning the process of addressing those concerns.
Certainly. For the record, Chris Curtis, Legislative Auditor, Senator Begich, the Chair. The report, which is dated June of 2020, is a sunset audit of the Board of Direct Entry Midwives. In that report, we do recommend only a two-year extension, which is 6 years less than the eight-year maximum allowed for in statute. Our reduced extension recommendation was due to an issue we found related to a confidential ongoing investigation that could potentially impact the board's ability to protect the public. So we recommended a very short extension. Now, in addition, we make recommendations. Now, these three recommendations did not impact the extension because I found this other issue that trumped everything. So I wouldn't have probably recommended a full extension anyways because we have three recommendations. But one of the recommendations has to do with the fact that we found that the board had identified a need to change their statutes to align with national standards and had not proceeded with that due to a concern over the impact on their fees. So we thought that wasn't in the public's best interest, and so we had a recommendation. So as I understand it, this bill is trying to do that. And so, yes, we did mention that they had identified a need for that. So that's how it relates to the audit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, in conversations, and I'll work with the sponsor on this, I think, if that's all right, Mr. Chairman, in conversations with different members of the community, and I've spoken to a couple, there seems to be a difference of opinion as to the best approach for this. And what I want to try to do is craft a simplified definition that doesn't necessarily name an organization. But so I would that be consistent with the recommendation of one of the national – there's at least two national organizations, maybe three, that have different standards. And I want to see if we can come up with a definition that allows – any midwife under any of those organizations. So is that something that would be consistent with the audit recommendation?
Through the chair, we have really no comment on that. We didn't look at it. I don't even know to what extent the changes are necessary or whether there's more than one organization out there. So I really can't have any opinion on that. I can just confirm that the audit did not look at it.
May I ask one more thought? You mentioned a confidential issue, which I know we can't discuss because it's a confidential issue, and so I'm forced to ask the question, is there a path to resolution of that issue, or has that issue been resolved so that there wouldn't be concerns external to this bill that we should be worried about?
Certainly, through the chair, because it's a two-year extension, we always begin the audit the year before, so we are about ready to start the audit on the direct entry midwives. So we will have legislative oversight of that issue via legislative audit, and our report will come out this year.
And I guess as a follow-up to that, so because there is a misunderstanding thinking that the extension of the midwives did not happen, but that did occur, and so they will not go away if this bill does not pass. The midwives will still be a licensed entity within the state, at least until the completion of the next audit.
Yes, they have an extension that I believe is 2023. Mm-hmm. So they're not set to sunset till June 30th, 2023. And they, regardless of what happens with the audit or whether extension bill is passed next year, they'll have a year to wind down their affairs. And if they're not extended, then their licensing process would just go to the division, and the division would carry it out.
Thank you. Senator Hughes.
So technically, they're good until June 29th, 2024 at this point, because after that June 30th, 2023, they have till the next fiscal year kicks in, or June 30th, maybe it would be, of 2024.
I would defer to Director Chambers for a definitive answer on that.
Director Chambers, put yourself on the record.
Thank you. For the record, Sarah Chambers, Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. And through the chair, Senator Hughes, yes, the board would technically sunset in June of 2023, but that year wind down allows them sort of a grace period. So they would continue to function to wrap up their affairs, as Ms. Curtis put it. So really, June 2024 would be the hard stop.
I have another question.
Senator Hughes.
So, Chris, you mentioned the pending confidential investigation, and then you said there were three other things you suggested. One was alignment with national certification standards. So what were the other two things?
Certainly. I don't know if you have a copy of the audit in your meeting packets, but the first rec was that the board should recommend statutory changes that benefit the public, and because they had identified a need to align their statutes with national standards, that was part of that rec. Rec 2 was DCBPL's chief investigator should ensure investigations are completed timely. So we had found three that investigations that had unjustified periods of inactivity, and the inactivity was due to result of turnover and competing priorities. And then the third rec was the board should improve oversight of the peer review process.
Okay. Follow-up?
Yes, there he is.
So, and I know you have to be careful. You stay neutral and maybe can't give your opinion on the bill. Though these three items are currently in the bill. Have you looked at the bill, and are they in there?
Senator Hughes, I have not looked at the bill.
Okay, thank you.
Take a quick at ease. We are back on the record. Are there any additional questions for Director Curtis or Director Chambers?
I just have a comment.
Yes, Senator Baggage?
If people do want a copy of the audit, I do have a copy here and could share it with folks if you don't have it in your packets. So.
She'll have it. Senator Hughes.
Can you repeat the third one again? Oversight, what was the third one?
The board should improve oversight of the peer review process.
Peer review process, okay. And I know you can't give your opinion, but I believe the bill changes the makeup of the board. Would that be related to the benefit of the public and maybe for the peer review process? Should that be a consideration on those two items?
Through the chair, I couldn't say.
Okay, that's something as policymakers, Mr. Chair, we might want to think about. And I don't. Are you bringing? Well, he left the room, so I guess you're not bringing the sponsors. Yes. Sponsor up. So I don't know if I should make a general comment or about the bill.
We can wait till the end. Maybe the sponsor may have to run a quick errand, but we're going to finish up public testimony.
Okay.
And then thank you, directors, for being here and answering committee's questions. We're now going to open up public testimony on SB 192. The first person, is anyone here in the room in Juneau like to testify? Do you want to come forth? Place your name and affiliation on the record and plan for 2 minutes for your testimony. And thank you for bearing this weather.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Johanna Crossett, and I am a local midwife. I'm a licensed midwife here in Juneau. And thank you for hearing this bill for a second time. I'm really curious to see how you all choose to amend it and craft it, change it, and make it the best it can be for public safety reasons. I'm so curious about the audit question. Myself, I was told that the intent of the bill was the audit recommendation. So if that's not the case, I'm curious to hear more. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to the phone lines and go with Rachel Pugh, followed by Ida Daria. Rachel, if you can place yourself on the record and plan for 2 minutes for your testimony and state your name and affiliation.
Hi, this is Rachel Pugh. I am a licensed midwife in Eagle River, Alaska, and I am also a board member on the State Board of Midwifery. I was actually on here to just answer a few questions, and there are some things I would like to address when it comes to the recommendations and the audit. The board chair can go more into details, and I know she is on here and looking to make a comment also. Recommendation number 2 and number 3 have already been addressed in our legislative audit. The only recommendation that was not addressed is recommendation number 1, and that is what this bill is designed to do, is to complete all 3 recommendations of our legislative audit. So I think that's a good piece of information I think you all need to hear. I am also interested to hear what this proposed amendment is. I have not seen that or heard anything about that, but I'm looking forward to seeing what that is and the reasoning behind it. But I am still going to say I support SB 192 as written. There was a lot of time, and there is also, I would also like to point out, because I know that it was brought up that there is multiple national organizations for certified professional midwives, and there is not. There is only one. We only have one certifying organization, and that is the North American Registry of Midwives, otherwise known as NARM. Others are just associations. They are not our certifying organization. So I hope that answers also another one of your questions that you had. So no, we are only choosing, and that is why when I put these statutes together, I actually consulted with our certifying organization, which is NARM, to make sure that these statutes fulfilled national standards. So I hope that also helps answer that question. Otherwise, I still stand by. I support 192 as written. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. Yes. Ms. Pugh, you said you are available for questions, correct?
I am.
Yes, we have a question from Senator Hughes then from Senator Baggage follow.
Thank you, Rachel. The profession of midwifery is an important one, and I maybe have a bit of a conflict of interest because I have a family member who's under the care of one right now for a very precious baby on the way. So, one of the things that I wanted to ask about is what in the bill is not part of the audit recommendations?
There isn't. It was the entire bill is designed to meet national standards. So there's not something outside of that scope.
Follow up?
Yes, Senator Hughes.
So I understand that the board makeup, there's a suggestion in removing the physician and I believe an advanced practice nurse that works in a hospital setting. Is that part of the audit recommendation?
It was talking about the national standards, and when we were kind of taking a look at, as a board, the makeup of our board, when we went line by line in April of last year through the proposed statutes at that time, there were 4 members of our state midwifery board on the line at the time, and we went line by line through them. And when we were finished, it was a unanimous vote that the statutes as written, which the OB was on board with, of taking out and changing the board to 2 CPMs and 2 APRNs / CNMs that work out of hospital because they work more closely with us and they understand our scope of practice because they are actually working in the same environment that we are working in. CNMs / APRNs that work in hospital and OBs really have no idea how we operate outside of the hospital realm. So sometimes that makes board decisions really difficult because we're spending more time trying to describe to them how we do our job, basically, because they really have no idea. So the reason the change was in there was so that we are working with counterparts of the APRN / CNMs that work outside of the hospital and in collaboration with the rest of the midwives in the state. I am not the only midwife that works in collaboration very closely with out-of-hospital CNMs. So we have a really good working relationship, and they would know more what our scope of practice is, which would be an asset on our board for sure. Right,
Senator Hughes?
Does that answer your question, Senator Hughes?
Yeah, so as clarification, it wasn't a specific audit recommendation, but it was something your board decided that would the board believes it
be
would
beneficial.
Be beneficial. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Begich and then Senator Reinbold.
I just would follow up that question, Mr. Chairman, by Rachel asking you the question. You know, the I mean, I have the audit in front of me, and the audit recommendation is the board identified a need to change certification statutes to align Alaska's midwifery laws with national standards, and then goes on to say the certified direct entry midwife certification statutes are defined, and it indicates the area of the statutes where they're defined, and that you, as a board, have the authority to establish regulations. The statutory changes, I mean, the recommendation really is quite vague. It's we recommend the board pursue, given this context, statutory changes that benefit the public. The bill is numerous pages long and includes a lot of different suggestions, but wouldn't it be sufficient to just focus on the section 0865050, which relates to the qualifications for license? The language you propose here holds a valid certified professional midwife certificate if the certificate is issued by a nationally recognized midwife organization recognized by the board, giving you as a board member the ability to do that piece, of course, and the requirements for a certificate are consistent with this chapter. Isn't that sufficient to meet the audit requirement?
It's actually not. Currently, we are practicing under restriction of trade. CDMs are not recognized by any kind of insurance companies, and CPM is the national standard. And we, right now, currently do not practice as CPM, and that is the national standard. So when we were looking at the statute changes that were necessary, when we changed one component, it actually changed them all. Because we are so, I mean, these are 30-year-old statutes. I mean, I don't know any, I mean, CNM or OB that practices under 30-year-old statutes that are restricted of trade. So when we were actually looking at bringing it up to national standards, we looked at all of them. I mean, the national organization looked at it and they're like, well, all of the majority of this has to change because none of this actually is national standard.
Follow up.
Yeah, and then we're going to continue on because we do got to finish up our list of testifiers after Senator Rambo gets the question. Senator Begich.
Just my follow-up would be how many approximately, how many of those currently certified as midwives in Alaska would lose that certification if this bill were adopted? Do you know?
Would lose their license if they, what, if they weren't CPM?
Would lose their license if they're not already meeting these national standards. I don't know the answer to the question I'm asking.
There's maybe less than 5 in our entire state that don't have their CPM already.
That's all the questions I have for now.
Senator Reinbold.
Mine's just a comment. First of all, Rachel, I just wanted to say thank you. I know you're on the board. I know you do your homework. You do a lot of technical work. I personally want to say thank you because I'm on Let's Budget and Audit, and you still clarified it for me that number 2 and 3 have been addressed and that the bill was designed for to address audit number 1. And I actually just wanted to say thank you for serving and being from my community.
Thank you.
All right. Next, we're going to go on to Ida Dara, followed by a Catherine Alt. Ida, if you could.
Thank you very much. My name. Hello?
Yes, if you can place your name.
My name is Ida Dara. I am a certified professional midwife, but I'm also the executive director of the North American Registry of Midwives, which is the national organization that issues the credential certified professional midwife. And I want to thank the committee, the Health and Human Services Committee, for the opportunity to speak in support of Senate Bill 192. The Certified Professional Midwife credential is nationally accredited by the National Commission for Certifying Agencies and is the basis for licensure in the 37 states that license midwives specifically to attend births outside of the hospital. This is the only national credential that requires training and experience in out-of-hospital birth. Alaska has recognized direct entry midwives since at least 1999, and support of this bill will bring Alaska up to the national standards for the licensure of certified professional midwives. It's a very important result of passing this bill will be to change the title to licensed midwife. The term certified is based on meeting the national certification standards of the National Midwifery Credential, but licensure is done by each state. The current system in Alaska already functions as a licensure program, so the title should reflect that. This is not a change to the legal path or practice in Alaska, but is a refinement and improvement of the current system. And the second important action of this bill is to bring licensure up to the national standards. All who currently hold the title Certified Direct Entry Midwife in Alaska have already passed the national certification exam, but some of them have not applied for the credential. Those who are not CPMs but hold a state credential can easily obtain the CPM credential with a simplified application and a fee of $50. It's not a big hurdle to obtain the credential if they've already been licensed by the state and passed the exam, but they can get this credential, and then the credential itself will verify that they have their CEUs in every recertification cycle, that they have peer review, and they also have CPR and neonatal resuscitation training.
Ida, your time is up.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of this bill, and I'm here to answer any questions anyone might have about the CPM credential or the North American Registry of Midwives. Thank you.
Thank you. We're next going to go to Catherine Alt, followed by Mary Yamagawa. Catherine, if you can place your name and affiliation for the record and prepare your comments for 2 minutes.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, my name is Catherine Alt. I am a certified nurse midwife down in Homer, providing both home and hospital birth. I am the president of the Alaska affiliate of the American College of Nurse Midwives, as well as a member of the APRN Alliance. Today I'm speaking on behalf of myself, as well as the APRN Alliance. First, I'd like to say that we very much support direct entry midwives, and we support them changing their licensure to licensed midwives. But overall, we have a lot of issues and opposition with other parts of this bill, so we do not support the bill as it is written now. Some of the main concerns are about the composition of the board and changing the requirement for the nurse midwives to be actively practicing out of the hospital. We think that it starts to erode some of those important relationships that are made with in-hospital providers, because as sometimes home births have to transfer to the hospital, and those relationships are really important to provide smooth transfers. The Division of Public Health right now has a quality improvement measure that I'm a part of, and direct entry midwives are part of, and OBs are a part of, that is actually trying to improve the transfer process from the community into the hospital. And I think that this bill actually is doing the opposite. That's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Mary Yamagama, followed by Bethany.
Hello. My name is Mary Yamagawa. I am a certified direct entry midwife in Wasilla, Alaska. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today regarding this such important matter. I actually had a five-minute testimony prepared because I was part of the invited testimony, so I'm going to try to cut out a huge portion of my...
Mary, that's fine. We'll allow you to do the 5 minutes. You are correct.
Oh,
that was...
Okay.
Yes,
Thank you.
You are correct.
Thank you for allowing me to read the whole thing. Okay. So as My name is Mariana Gallas. I am the current president of MA. MA is the Midwives Association of Alaska. As an organization of community-based or out-of-hospital midwives, MA's role in Alaska is well-defined in our mission statement. That reads, the Midwives Association of Alaska exists to promote midwifery in Alaska through continuing education, support, and structure for direct entry midwives and midwifery students. We are committed to the midwifery model of care, providing choices in childbirth for women and babies. The midwife's model of care is based on the fact that pregnancy and birth are normal life processes. The midwife's model of care includes monitoring the physical, psychological, and social well-being of the mother in the childbearing cycle. We provide the mother with individualized education, counseling, and prenatal care, continuous hands-on assistance during labor and delivery, and postpartum support. We specialize in minimizing technological interventions, identifying and referring women who require obstetrical attention, and we specialize, and we know that the application of this woman-centered model of care has been proven to reduce the incidence of birth trauma, birth injury, trauma, and cesarean section. As an organization made up of fiercely independent and strong women, it is understood that we will not all agree on every detail of everything. We each come from differing perspectives based on our individual lives, practices, and colleagues. There is a midwife out there for everyone, for every personality, for every individual. We have heard from a small group of our midwives within our organization that the language of our statutes today are not to their liking. We understand these viewpoints they've shared with us and also recognize that the majority of our midwives have expressed their support with these statutes updates. Now, if I may be indulged to add my own very personal comment here. As a woman who spent all of her childbearing years in Alaska, my voice matters too. As a pregnant woman and a new mother, I was mistreated and misled by the mainstream medical hospital-based system providers in this state. I myself had restricted options for childbirth due to the preferences and policies of hospital-based providers in this state. It was my treatment that then led me to seek this profession of midwifery. It was the way I had been treated that led me to the education, advocacy, and midwifery model of care that I currently espouse. Even after discovering how this restriction of options affected how I have my baby, I was still powerless in my own advocacy. My search for a flexible and compassionate provider within the hospital setting of Alaska was fruitless. In late November of 2019, I loaded up my very large family into our motorhome and drove down the Alcan, 37 weeks pregnant with my sixth child, in order to be under the care of out-of-hospital community-based providers in California. The midwives that cared for me in California were no different with their licensing and credentialing than the CPMs in my own state of Alaska, some of whom I dearly loved and would have loved to use as my own midwife, had they not been restricted with their trade by Alaska state statutes and regulations. My family spent weeks away from our home, bouncing from lodging to lodging as we awaited my body to go into labor. The absolute stress of the logistical nightmare of being away from home, the pressure to go into labor, and the feeling of failure on my part to be able to have the empowered experience that I needed while mothering the rest of my kids and going broke in Los Angeles in December was a wreck, and I wouldn't wish it upon anyone. As a reminder, this statute update is not to be done in the interest of midwives. The audit recommendation was that these statute changes be made for the benefit of the public. I know that we have a community full of families behind us that supports this legislation, and I hope you will too. In summary, midwives do more than provide care. We provide a safe space for women to feel empowered. We provide an understanding and compassionate heart within a woman's community. We provide frontline access to quality care and have the resources and connections to refer families when necessary. Our women don't fall through the cracks. Our babies that we deliver and that we care for when as newborns, they get evaluated, they get assessed more frequently, and they get referred as soon as they are that referral is needed. We give community-based care that is proven to grow strong families and has great outcomes. Thank you for your time and your thoughtful consideration of this legislation.
Thank you, Mary, for your invited testimony. Any questions for the invited testifier? Seeing none, thank you again for being online, and sorry for the confusion there.
That's okay. Thank you.
Our next person is Bethany. I'm going to mispronounce your last name, Bethany, so I'm not going to try. If you could put yourself on the record, your name and affiliation, and provide 2 minutes for your testimony.
Yes, my name is Bethany Kirilov. I know it's a tough last name. I am an Alaskan mom, and I am a current licensed direct entry apprentice midwife. I have worked as an apprentice with Haven Midwife Reimbursement. Sorry. And I'm also a mom to 4 kiddos. I support the proposed statute changes in SB 192 exactly as they are written. This would be extremely beneficial for Alaskan mothers as well as midwives, and they would fulfill the requirements of our audit perfectly. I have had many, many mothers tell me that they are considering or that they will carry out a birth without care providers present because of Alaska's current statutes limiting midwifery care and these variations of normal. It's terrifying to think of what we call a free birth without skilled providers for moms who do not qualify for out-of-hospital birth options, such as in the case of VBAC, twins, or breech presentations. Without access to qualified providers that they want at their birth, we're bound to have more injury or problems for mothers and babies that may be prevented with skilled caregivers and attendants. As Mary said, she had to leave state to find a midwife with the exact same license that wasn't tied. Midwives exercising their fullest training is in the interest of Alaskans. All midwifery programs that qualify us for licensure cover these topics that we have mentioned before, and we are required to know to manage these situations anyways. Why not use those skills for the good of Alaskan mothers that might not get care otherwise? Most other midwifery-friendly states allow midwives to utilize this part of their training and do not tie the hands of their midwives. Choice for mothers and control over their care is one of the largest things that attracts people to midwives. Just because a mother is pregnant with twins or babies in a breech position doesn't mean that she shouldn't have the same options available to her. Also, billing private insurance will lessen the expenses paid out of pocket for families, and that would be another positive effect of this bill. Finances can be a very large barrier that causes them to be faced with either a hospital birth they don't want or going without a provider. I know I personally don't have thousands to drop on a home birth, and if I don't qualify for Medicaid, then I wouldn't be able to have a midwife in attendance. As a student, I would like to kind of put my perspective here as well, too. The current statutes that we have in Alaska are very, very restrictive, demanding a MEEK-only education. I have been a student of 2 schools, Midwives College of Utah and Via Vita School of Midwifery. When I began Via Vita, it was still acceptable for licensure in Alaska. It is also, I believe, still worth a licensure with NARM as well, if I'm not mistaken. But bringing our educational requirements in line with NARM would be beneficial for Alaskans because it will encourage more people to become midwives that want to become midwives but won't because of the restrictive educational statute. And let's see if I can look at my list here. Requiring MEEK education only limits the choices of educational programs to a very narrow list of schools that choose to become MEEK accredited. NARM issuing the CPM credential to midwives nationwide, and they administer the NARM exam to ensure a midwife knows all she must before becoming fully licensed to practice on her own. So they are an excellent choice in an organization to set standards for our licensure.
And Bethany, if you could wrap up your testimony, your time is up. Yeah, if you can just wrap up your testimony, your time is up.
Okay, perfect. I just wanted to say I completely, fully support SB 192 as it is written, and thank you very much for allowing me to speak today.
Thank you. Seeing no one else online for question, for a testimony, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. This time we'll ask the bill's sponsor to come back up. I think there might be some additional questions from committee members. I think Senator Begich had a question for the bill sponsor.
No, I don't think I did, Mr. Chairman. Okay. Yeah, he had stepped out, but I think my questions were answered by some of the other questions that were asked. But I think I was just getting to the issue of trying to narrow this down to the least intrusive bill possible that does what the audit requested. So I plan to work with the sponsor and talk to him about, have him walk me through some of those pieces of it so I can be more satisfied. But we don't need to do that at this time in front of the committee. I need to formulate my questions.
All right. Any other questions for the bill sponsor before we set this bill aside? Any last comments from the bill sponsor in closing?
No, I just wanted to say thank you again, Mr. Chairman, for hearing this bill, and I appreciate all the comments that were made, both pro and con. We could probably work a bill with some amendments, and I appreciate Senator Begich offering that help, too. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. This time, we will go ahead and set Senate Bill 192 aside, and we will revise some amendment deadlines that we set earlier, just in case members heard public testimony and may want to add additional items to consider. So we will set an amendment deadline for SB 175 for Monday the 14th at 5 p.m. And then for 192, we will set a deadline for Thursday the 17th at 5 p.m. for those two bills. With that, our next week's schedule begins on the Ides of March, March 15th. We'll continue SB 124, mental health facilities, meds, and finish questions and have that from the committee. And then on St. Patty's Day, we will hear SB 211, Missing and Murder Indigenous Women report by Senator Olson on the 17th. And that is it. And with that, are there any closing comments from committee members? Committee members? Seeing none, we are adjourned at 2:34 p.m.